number two of After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan here in the Odyssey Studios in the Kansas City metro area. Logan Weber here with you. JT Noah is our producer this evening. Coming up here at about 7:15, I'm going to replay an interview from yesterday with Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star. He is the Royals beat writer for that publication. We were talking about the news that Jack Caglione was sent to minor league camp, what to make of certain performances here in spring training, and what his expectations are of the Royals coming up here as the season begins in about 9 days for Kansas City. That March 27th date at Kauffman against the Cleveland Guardians. And, sort of mixed reviews in the text line, 913-586-7965, on my opinion that the Royals will be a team that stands pat or maybe gets a little bit worse in terms of their overall record from last year. I believe that this is a team that is an 84-86 win, up to 88, I think, might be the ceiling for this Royals team this year. And there are a lot of people who disagree. And there are people who do agree. Somebody in the text line said, we had two starting pitchers as all-stars, and Michael Wacha just continues to be a solid vet. It's going to be hard to duplicate. Also, the White Sox were historically bad, and the rest of the Central took advantage, hence the three teams in the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see if they can do that. I don't know. Somebody said, you don't have anyone on the team having a better season than they had last year. Yeah, I see MJ Melendez having a slightly better year than he had last year. I see Vinny Pasquantino having a better year because I believe he stays healthy, right? There are certain guys on the roster that I think can be better than they were a year ago. I think Chris Bubich could potentially have his best year as a starter in Major League Baseball for this Royals team this year. But I have a hard time looking at guys in their mid-30s and assuming that they're going to continue to be good ball players. Like, how much more can Hunter Renfroe improve at this point in his career, even though he was bad last year? Can Salvador Perez hit 270 again at 35? Can Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo continue to pitch the way that they pitched last year? I have a hard time believing in it. That's just my opinion on the matter. But we'll hear more about that when I replay that interview with Jalen Thompson coming up here at about 7:15. Of course, college basketball going on right now. You've got one of the first four games taking place. The under 12 timeout in a 16 versus 16 matchup. St. Francis against Alabama State. And right now, St. Francis is up 50-49, despite the fact that St. Francis has not accumulated a single bench point in this game. In fact, JT, because we were talking about this earlier, St. Francis has not had a bench player attempt a field goal in this game. They have put up 33 shots. All 33 have come from starters, and they've gone nine deep. They've had four guys come off the bench and play in this game. None of them have attempted a shot through the first 29 minutes.
That's wild. That's wild. And this 16 versus 16 matchup is, quote unquote, the worst of the worst, because you're pretty much the last two that got in. And thankfully, you won your conference tournament. But guess what your reward is for winning this game? None other than the Auburn Tigers, who are not happy right now because people keep talking about how they haven't finished the season well and yada, yada, yada. So I wouldn't want to be facing Jemiah Broome come Thursday.
Yeah, there's a lot of baggage that comes with Bruce Pearl's, you know, remarkable regular season teams who have always kind of missed expectations come March when it gets NCAA tournament time. And he's had some really, really impressive teams, and he had some phenomenal teams in Tennessee, and they just never got to the level that you expected them to. And now this year, you're the number one overall seed in the field. I think they're the second best team overall in college basketball. I am very bullish on the Duke Blue Devils. Between the Knipple kid and what Cooper Flagg brings, who is the best player in college basketball, I don't even think that's an opinion. I think that's a straight up fact.
You could say Auburn's the third best team right now. You could argue that they're the third best team right now in college basketball, because you could argue Florida is better.
I knew you were going to say Florida, because you said you did a bracket today and you You have Florida winning it all,
which
correct?
Which is scary. Yes, I do. It is scary that I have Florida winning it because everyone's so high on Florida. We talked about how sometimes you don't like taking the conference champion to win it all. I just think Florida has remarkable bigs that can get out, spread you out, shoot the ball, and then also defend well. And when Clayton is doing what he was doing in the tournament, I mean, they're going to be really hard to beat.
They're a great team. I will agree with that. I'm very bullish on St. John's also. I have St. John's as a Final Four team. I take that back. I've got them as an Elite Eight team because I think Maryland is phenomenal. I've got Maryland in the Final Four.
You know what their nickname is, right?
The Terrapins?
The Crab Five.
The Crab Five. What is that? Because they're from Maryland?
I believe it's because they play all the minutes, and they're just the Crab Five.
Okay. Interesting.
I know they're called the Crab Five. I'm not really
it's got to
sure.
be that's got to be like a northeast sort of like, you know, crab I don't know, something seafood related is why they're the Crab Five. Yeah. But I could be wrong.
But I think Auburn and Florida come the second round are going to have the toughest 8-9 matchup, whoever wins that 8-9 game, because Auburn I think will get a very upset Louisville team in Lexington, mind you. They're going to have a home yeah. game, and then Florida I think is going to get UConn, and you know I think UConn beats Oklahoma, and you know UConn's going to be feisty.
It's hard to argue with Dan Hurley coach teams in March after they won back-to-back national championships.
Even with the record they had this year, and I know the Big East wasn't quote-unquote great, it's still hard to go against Hurley. I will say I am, but it's going to be a close game.
I mean, there are complaints with the NCAA and the selection committee every year, but this year has got some really, really bad decisions. I mean, the decision to put North Carolina in the field in the first place, yikes. Why? Why are we, why, what was the, you put a team with one quad one win into the field over a West Virginia team who played well in the Big 12 and other teams who were, you know, under consideration. And then you've got Louisville, who is the number 10 team in the country in the AP Top 25. They're number 11 in the coaches poll. They went 27-7, and you go, yeah, they're an 8 seed. Wait, what?
It made no sense. The ACC, you're giving North Carolina because, oh, you're in the ACC, but then you're punishing Louisville, who lost in the ACC championship.
Yeah, a team who is ranked 10 in the AP, 11 in the coaches poll, that is firmly on the 3 seed line. Right, if you want to put them as a 4 seed at worst, okay, the argument can be had. If you want to throw a Michigan or a Memphis ahead of whatever, but to take the number 10 team in the country and make them an 8 seed, which usually means that you're like a borderline receiving votes, you're like either a really good mid-major school or you're a middle-of-the-pack high major. I just don't get it, dude. Those two decisions leave me scratching my head, and I feel bad for Auburn. Like, to be the number one overall seed in the tournament, and your reward for being the number one overall seed is you got to play a top 10 team in America in the second round. I'd be furious if I was the Auburn Tigers. Absolutely furious.
You're furious because not only are you playing them, but you're also playing them literally, what, an hour and a half away from their home court? Like, it's going to be a home game for Louisville. Also, to put more into perspective about Louisville, they beat Clemson, who's a 5 seed, twice this year, including in the ACC tournament. To me, it shows more about how they don't care about conference tournament play. They only care about the lower ones. Hey, you win it, you're getting in. Because if you look at it, Michigan shouldn't be a 5 for winning the Big 12 or Big 10 tournament. It felt like they already were like, hey, you're a 5 seed, and you're going to get the best 12 seed you could possibly get, because UC San Diego is going to be extremely tough. Because if anybody knows who UC San Diego is, they're one of 3 teams to have 30 wins this season. So
yeah,
it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, when you Louisville, 27-7, they're the number 10 team in America. When they're an 8 seed, and no offense, Mizzou is a 6 seed, right? Which I believe that was the rightful spot for, that was the correct seeding, to have them on the 6 seed line as the number 23 team in America. Kansas is a 7 seed. KU is a 7, and Louisville's an 8? Where is the justification for that? Does Kansas or Mizzou, do they play in tougher conferences? Yes, they do. Absolutely. But there's something to be said for winning the games that are on your schedule. Louisville has had 34 games on their schedule, and they've won 27 of them. And there are teams, like you mentioned, that they beat head-to-head or beat head-to-head twice that are somehow seated higher than them in this field of 68. And I will never, ever be able to comprehend that.
They're now, one seed line higher than Oklahoma. Oklahoma, who went 21-13, mind you, who went undefeated in their non-conference and then struggled in SEC play. And I get it. They did beat Missouri. I don't care. I'm just saying they struggled in SEC play and they're one seed line higher than Oklahoma. It makes no sense.
Yeah, they beat, yeah, like you said, they beat Clemson twice, including in the ACC tournament. And their ACC tournament concluded with them losing to Duke. Okay, yeah, take that. You'll absolutely stomach that. And look at the final stretch for Louisville. I mean, beating Boston College, Miami, NC State, Notre Dame, Florida State, Virginia Tech, Pitt, Cal, Stanford, Stanford again.
It would make
sense. And then Clemson. They won 11 straight games from January to this point before that loss against Duke, and they're an 8 seed.
I would get justification if they lost to Stanford in the first round or the second round of the ACC tournament. They didn't. They came back and won, and they hit the buzzer beater. And then they go on to the ACC championship, and they're like, you know what? You're an 8 seed. And I don't know if you saw, but did you see the head coach's reaction when they put him up? Because, I mean, it went Auburn, the 16 playing game, and then it went Louisville, and that head coach was like, wait, that's us. Wait, are we sure about that? Like, is that a typo?
Like, am I being punked?
Yeah, like, this has got to be April Fool's.
Yeah, where's Ashton Kutcher with the handheld camera? Like, there's something about this that doesn't feel right. Yeah, and Louisville, I mean, you look at their schedule, they only have maybe one bad loss. They lost to Tennessee. That's a top four seed in the NCAA tournament.
Is that a bad loss? No.
No. They lost to Oklahoma. They're a 9 seed, but they're in the field. You lost to Ole Miss. That's a tournament team. You lost to Duke twice. Take it. It's Duke. They're a 1 seed. They're the number 2 team in America. You lost to Kentucky on the road. Rivalry game. You had to go to Rupp for that game.
And remember, this is a new team coming together with a lot of transfers. You kind of figured it was going to be a tough battle in Kentucky.
And their only, I guess you could qualify as bad loss, was to Georgia Tech. They lost on the road to the Yellow Jackets by 7 in what was a quad one game. And they're an 8 seed. Okay, dude. I don't get it. 913-586-7965. I'll get off my soapbox about that. But I do have more college basketball news to get to here in the 7 o'clock hour. However, coming up, we are going to be replaying an interview with Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star, talking a little Royals baseball. That's coming up next here on After Hours with Logan Weber and JT Noah on 96.5 The Fan. Spent a lot of the first hour talking Royals baseball and whether or not this team will improve over last year. We might see a little bit of a regression, or maybe this team will stay pat. Of course, the big news from yesterday was that Jack Caglione was sent down to minor league camp and will not be with the Royals, at least not on opening day. And yesterday we visited with Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star, talking about that decision for Caglione to go down to minor league camp, Gavin Cross and a few others, and what the timetable for those guys could be to make their way back up to Kansas City. And ultimately, what is the expectation? What is the prediction for the Kansas City Royals this season in 2025? Can they get back to the postseason? Can they compete for the AL Central? We talked about all of that with Jalen yesterday. I want to replay that interview for you right now. So sit back, relax, and enjoy hearing from Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star. Talking about the Royals and opening day and everything that goes along with it. Of course, the biggest news of this Monday for the Kansas City Royals was the announcement that Jack Caglione was being sent to minor league camp. There's now only 40 names left with the major league team down in Arizona, and Caglione will not be one of those that will presumably make the opening day roster for the Royals. What do you make of that decision, and what's the latest timetable for when we may see Jack Caglione in a Kansas City Royals jersey up in the show?
it was the right move. I think that with Jack Caglione, the most important thing for him is to continue to learn and continue to grow. This is the guy that you're talking about. This is his first full major league season, that professional season that he's going in. And he's going to be able to learn and grow in the minor leagues. And one thing that really stood out about him in the spring is he showed the elite power. He showed the ability to play first base. He showed just the growth facing major league pitching. But now you have to put it all together. You have to go through the ups and the downs, and that you will get that in the minor leagues. But the Royals are really excited about what he can bring. They just know that you can't rush him. He has to go through his process to get to the major leagues. But it sure looks impressive, and it looks like he'll be on the fast track sooner rather than later.
Another name that was among the minor league camp send downs, I guess you could say, today was outfielder Gavin Cross, who put together some really impressive performances here in the midst of the spring training. He had that exceptional throw from right field to get a guy out at third over the weekend. A former top prospect from this Royals team. He was the 9th overall pick a few years ago. It looked for a little while there like he might be a name that gets thrown around in that right field aspect for the Royals, because there's still some questions to be had there. What do you make of the decision to send Gavin Cross down this early, or I should say right now, as spring training is just 10 days away from being complete? And when might we see him in Kansas City?
Yeah, the Royals, they have options that they at the big league level that can play the outfield. And on top of that, you throw in potentially using Jonathan India or Michael Massey in regular season in the outfield. So you have to be able to evaluate all your options. Gavin Cross put himself in a good spot with the Royals this spring, but he's still young. He had minor league options available, and it really comes down to giving a guy regular at bats, giving a guy a chance to, you know, matriculate and to grow in the minor leagues before he's ready to come to the major league level. The Royals still have a lot of faith and value in Gavin Cross, and, you know, he's going to continue to get better. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Talking about Royals in spring training, they had a really impressive day today against the Diamondbacks, winning 12-1. And one of the highlights of the day was Jonathan India and Bobby Witt Jr., both of whom went 3-for-3. We know to expect from Bobby. He's going to be an MVP candidate. Baseball America had him as the number 2 player in all of Major League Baseball today in their top 100 list. But for Jonathan India, this has been a big conversation, what he provides for this Royals team in the leadoff spot. What have you made of his performance in spring training thus far, and what can he bring to this Royals team batting in that one hole spot after they had a lot of trouble finding a leadoff hitter a season ago?
Yeah, I think the word that really stands out to me about Jonathan India is stability. You see it day in and day out. When he's in the game, he's the top of that order. He can draw a consistent a bat, whether that's going to be a single, a double, a home run, drawing a walk, getting on base. That's what he's going to do for this Royals team. And today he showed it. Gets on base, gets in front of Bobby Witt Jr. The Royals move him around. They score a couple of runs in the first inning. That's kind of how they want to play the game of baseball, and that's what Jonathan India can provide. Someone that you know is going to put up a professional at bat from pitch one, and I think that as long as he continues to do that with this Royals team, it lengthens the lineup, not necessarily in a way a power hitter might in the middle of the order, but just having more runners on base. And if you have a runner on base in front of Bobby Witt Jr., you have to pitch him differently. You can't just pitch around him. You have to pitch to him. And that only helps the Royals as they want to score runs for that stellar pitching staff that they have.
Seth Lugo had a really impressive day on the bump this afternoon. He went 5 complete innings of scoreless baseball. He struck out 5. He only gave up a walk and 3 hits. Probably his best performance of the spring thus far, after kind of struggling here in the middle part of March and even early on in spring training. What did you take away from his performance today, and what he can provide the Royals as seemingly that number 2 starter for Kansas City this year after an incredible year last year?
Yeah, I think with Seth Lugo, it's just a matter of continuing to be consistent, continuing to be the guy that the Royals signed last season to come over and be that veteran linchpin in the starting rotation. You know, with a lot of these guys, when it comes to spring training, they're either working on things early, getting themselves together to prepare for the regular season. Now they're starting to go 4, 5, even 6 innings. They're getting in tune. They're they are getting themselves ready for what the regular season is going to be like. So when you have a veteran like Seth Lugo, you know, it's just time to turn it on. It's time to lock in and be the pitcher that finished second in the AL Cy Young voting last year. So that is, I think, where he is at right now in his pitching plan. And you know, he might get maybe one more start or so before it's time and to go for the regular season. So I think it's going to be big for the Royals.
We've talked at length here over the past couple of weeks, now that spring training has gotten underway, Jalen, about who is going to be the number five starter, right? A couple of weeks ago, you had said that it appeared Chris Bubich was going to be that guy. I'm just curious from what you've heard around the area, what you've seen down there in Arizona, has that plan changed at all? Or is Bubich more than likely penciled in as that number five starter for Kansas City?
Yeah, you can. He's pretty much going to be the front runner for that fifth starter spot. I don't think anything has really changed necessarily. I think he's pitched well and he's earned that spot if the Royals choose to give it to him. But you can also look at someone like Daniel Lynch, the fourth. He's also pitched well, and the key for that is going to be deciding whether what the Royals want to do with Daniel Lynch. If he's someone that has pitched his way into a roster spot, maybe coming out of the bullpen, or do they decide to use him in Triple A in the minor leagues as pitching depth and give him consistent starts and allow him to pitch while the regular season is happening at Kauffman Stadium. So that's going to be something the Royals have to decide. But for Chris Bubich, in his case, he's continued to look like the guy that was one of the best young arms in the Royals system prior to Tommy John surgery. So I think they will more than likely give him that spot. We'll see what happens as spring training commences. But yeah, I think that both of those guys put themselves in a good spot. And I think Chris Bubich is going to be the guy. If the season starts today, I believe that will be that fifth starter.
And then you look at this Royals team, and of course, the big question, I think, for a lot of people now, especially that Caglione has been sent down to minor league camp, is what to make of MJ Melendez in left field. He's performed okay here in spring training. He's hitting 250, two home runs, eight ribbies. This is kind of, I think, for most, the conversation has been this is a make or break kind of year for MJ Melendez. He's 26 years old. He's coming off of the worst year of his career last year. What have you heard? What have you seen from MJ Melendez down in spring training? What should the expectation be for him this year? And if he gets off to a slow start, how long will it be before the Royals look elsewhere as to who's going to be that left fielder?
Yeah, I think the Royals know, and if you ask MJ Melendez, he'll also tell you that this is a big year for him. This is a year where he has to be better. He has worked on his game a lot this offseason. He's put in a lot of hard work, and the results have to show. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He understands that. I think if you look at some of his numbers this spring, it's hard to look at the counting numbers because it's such a small sample size. But you got to look at the kind of at-bats that he's had, being able to get to certain pitches that he couldn't get to last year because of his swing. It's more simplified now. We know we talked about that the last time it was on. And I think that for him, being able to just be a consistent force in the middle of that lineup and drive the runs, he drives runs in and, you know, help provide protection for the big three of Bobby Witt Jr., Salvador Perez, Vinny Pasquantino. I think that's going to be big for the Royals. As far as how the regular season will go, I think that the Royals are going to give him every opportunity to continue to be that guy in left field. And we'll see if they shift him around as they try to make sure they have Indian Massey in the lineup at all times. But I think the Royals are counting on MJ Melendez, and he has to perform this year.
No question about it. And then another, I think, strength of this Royals team that maybe wasn't at this time last year is the bullpen. You know, you trade for Lucas Ercig, you sign Carlos Estevez this offseason. Hunter Harvey is seemingly back healthy. Sam Long had a good year last year. What do you make of the bullpen for this Royals team, and what can they provide in terms of being able to contend and really be able to leverage those big-time late-inning performances to help this team compete in the AL Central?
Yeah, I think that the Royals in their bullpen, that's going to be something that's going to be key for the squad this year. If you look at who they brought in, they brought in Carlos Estevez because they believed that he was the best way to help the team win games this offseason. He's going to be someone that's going to get a lot of save opportunities early on in the season. And I think that having that veteran in there is going to really help guys like Lucas Erceg and Hunter Harvey and John Schreiber and Angel Zerpa, Sam Long, and the list goes on, because now you have someone that has that ability to finish out games in that ninth inning. So you don't always have to rely on Erceg if you don't want to. You can match up however you wish. And I think that the Royals, with their starting pitching, being able to go 5 or 6 innings and then giving it over to the bullpen is only going to enhance their ability to win games. Because if you remember last year, there were certain games where the Royals had a lead and then it kind of squandered late. 4 or 5 games could be the difference this year from going from a wild card team to winning the American League Central. And I think that's going to be key for them as they move forward.
Final question I've got for you, Jalen. It's this, right? We're at that time of year where everybody's making their predictions and prognostications about what team finishes with what record and where in the division. I've seen the Royals anywhere between, you know, 84 and 92 wins. Most of the time I see them penciled as second in the division behind the Guardians, which is kind of where I have them right now. Based on what you've seen so far this spring, what do you make of the Royals and where do you predict them finishing this year? Are they back in the postseason where they were a year ago?
I think they reached the postseason this year, and I've said since the beginning of the spring that I believe they get 90 wins and they are able to make it to the next round of the postseason. I think that's going to be key for them as they move forward. That's going to be able to help them grow and sustain themselves and go forward as far as proving that the playoff run they had in 2023 is important going into 2024. So that's what I think happens. We'll see how that goes. Anything can happen in the MLB. Injuries are always going to be something to take advantage of for a lot of teams. Who's going to be the best to deal with those? But I think the Royals win 90 games this year. I think that's the best that they can be. And if I had to say a lower number than that, I would say right at 86, 85.
Well, I think if the Royals hit 90 and do what you predict they will do, I think that's going to make Royals fans very, very happy. Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star joining us here. Appreciate you taking the time tonight, my man. I know you're busy down there in Surprise getting ready for the end of spring training and the start of opening day here in about 10 days at Kauffman in Kansas City. Again, a big thank you to Jalen Thompson. He was on the show with us yesterday here on After Hours and thought I'd replay a little bit of that, maybe alleviate some of the concerns of some of the listeners who did not like the fact that I had predicted the Royals for 86 wins. Jalen, who covers the team even more extensively than I do, certainly, thinks that they might be a 90-win baseball team. So he's a little bit more optimistic than I am in regards to what Kansas City can bring to the table in Major League Baseball. 913-586-7965 is our number. We've got some breaking news involving a now former, for the second time, Kansas City Chiefs receiver who has found a new home in the NFL. We'll discuss that next here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. March Madness is off to a spectacular start. I know it's a first, you know, it's a first four game. It's a 16 seed play-in. But man, it's coming down to the wire. St. Francis and Alabama State battling for an opportunity to play Auburn. It's a 68-68 tie with 11 seconds left in the second half, at least according to the ESPN box score that I'm looking at. But JT has a look of shock on his face. Give us the latest.
Yeah, Alabama State has the ball. They went up for a layup, missed it, a tip out, and then the guy is fouled. So Alabama State's headed to the free throw line with 11 seconds to take the lead.
Oof. That'd be a tough way to go out if you're St. Francis. You forced the miss, had a chance for the rebound to get the last shot to win the game. You can't corral the rebound, and then you ultimately end up fouling a jump shooter and give the opposition a chance to take the lead at the stripe. That's not exactly ideal.
I mean, but those free throws aren't going to be easy. The pressure is on.
Definitely is. At least for St. Francis, they do have some bench scoring. Their bench has now put up exactly five shot attempts in the game. Jeremy Clayville, again, no idea who that guy is. He's got 5 points off the bench. He's 2 of 4 from the field, 1 of 3 from behind the arc. And Weisler Sannin II is 1 for 1. I mean, he's filling up the stat sheet. He's got 5 rebounds and 4 assists off the bench, but he's only shot the ball once. Overall, St. Francis has shot it 48 times. Only 5 of those shot attempts have come from their bench.
Also, it's a 1-1. It was not a shooting foul, so it's a 1-1 opportunity for Alabama State.
Got to knock down the first one, man. You have to. I mean, you don't get the second one.
I love how they keep... I think they're going... They're panning the camera right to this dude's mom. They keep going right to this one lady praying, like, please make it. I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, man.
He's only a 70% free throw shooter.
I mean, 7 out of 10 is not...
He missed. Oh, he missed it. Oh, no. St. Francis has got the ball. No timeouts.
We got real-time play-by-play going on
here,
folks.
Oh, he lost it. It's stolen. Retaken back by St. Francis, and he loses it out of bounds. Oh, my gosh. 2 seconds left, and...
Alabama State's got the ball.
Alabama State now has the ball. They were trying to actually call a timeout, and he got it stolen away as he's trying to call the timeout.
Poor guy.
Dude, this is high-level 16-seed matchup, baby.
This is phenomenal.
Also, did you know this? This is key. The winner of this game still gets money and revenue for their conference.
Right.
That's why I hate that people are like, oh, it should be teams that didn't earn their way in. I think these low majors want to play in it because they can guarantee themselves to win some conference money.
Yeah, and where else are you going to put them, right? I mean, like these low major conference schools out of the A-Sun and, you know, these random sort of leagues.
The MEAC.
Yeah, and places like that are, you're just sort of like, wait, who's in that league? Like, wait, who is Bellarmine? I have no idea. That's the beauty of being a 14, 15, 16 seed. What is and what's the incentive for a one seed if it's like the teams that, you know, I don't know. And I know that there's people that are advocating nowadays. Like Tom Izzo last year was advocating for getting rid of automatic qualifiers. I'm a Tom Izzo fan. I respect what he's done throughout his career. That opinion should be shot into the sun. That is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Don't expand the NCAA tournament and don't mess with automatic qualifiers. Stop it.
The reason you don't expand the tournament is what has happened this year with UNC. Like, you don't want to see that.
Yeah, no, you're just giving the NCAA more rope to put in teams that don't deserve to get into the field.
So they've added it up to 3.4 seconds. And here goes Alabama State with their inbound. Oh, he's taking a long shot. It's like a Hail Mary. Ball's up in the air. He's got it. The layup's good. 1 second. Oh, my.
Wow.
Wow.
So you said it looked like a full court heave, but he just missed it short.
And he's short, and it looked like it bounced off the backboard. The guy went up and got it and put it back up.
Oh, it's
interesting
play.
It's like a Hail Mary. Aaron Rodgers out here throwing Hail Marys.
It's an interesting play. So up by 2, Alabama State is going to win in shocking fashion to kick off NCAA tournament action here in this March of 2025. Good way to start it, man. It's a good way to start it. 913-586-7965. I teased it during the last break. We didn't have an opportunity here to get to it in the last couple of minutes. But coming up, I want to talk about a former Kansas City Chief who is heading out once again for a team that could be a contender in the NFC next year. We'll talk about that next here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside JT Noah on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Mecole Hardman is a Green Bay Packer.
He a big cheesehead.
Apparently. That according to ESPN's Rob Domofsky. Mecole Hardman signing a 1-year deal with the Pack. He's 27 years old and, of course, was drafted by the Chiefs all those years ago, went to the Jets and then got traded back to the Chiefs for a late-round pick. And I mean, certainly doesn't move the needle for the Packers by any means. It doesn't all of a sudden take them from a team who I think could or should or will finish second in the NFC North next year, right? The Lions are still the Lions. I think the Vikings might regress a little bit going from the year that Sam Darnold had last year to now you're going to J.J. McCarthy, and maybe J.J. McCarthy can be a good quarterback, but it's going to be more or less his rookie season, at least in terms of the on-field stuff. The Bears, I think, are improved. Right, Caleb Williams is going to be going into year 2. You've done a lot to shore up the offensive line for that Bears team, going after, you know, trading for Joe Tooney from Kansas City and Jonah Jackson from the Rams. I like the look of this Bears offensive line more than we saw a year ago, but I don't think they're ready yet. I'm just not of that opinion. The Packers are going to be without Christian Watson, so this gives Jordan Love another weapon.
He needs him. I mean,
he does. He does. But it doesn't give them the number one, quote unquote, that Josh Jacobs was advocating for during Super Bowl week, much to the chagrin of some of his teammates. Romeo Dobbs. Was it Romeo Dobbs or was it somebody else? I can't remember
which. I thought it was Dobbs, but I could be wrong.
I can't remember which Packers receiver it was that kind of took exception to that comment, but I don't know. Yeah, Josh Jacobs lobbying for them to go after somebody, and they had options, right? They could have signed Cooper Kupp. They could have traded for DK Metcalf. They could have signed Devontae Adams or, you know, DeAndre Hopkins or some of these other guys, but so far, nothing. And this is where they're heading. Mecole Hardman is going to be adding on to this team that includes Jaden Reed, Romeo Dobbs, Dontavian Wicks, and Christian Watson whenever he comes back, right? Because he's not going to be available for the start of the year. I think the Packers would be lucky if he's available by week four or week five. I think that it could take them a little while. They may have to get through the first month of the regular season before they get their number one receiver back for a team that had a good year, but is still, I think, a step or two away from being a true contender in the National Football League.
I think the Bears don't finish last this year in the North. I think it might be the Vikings.
Oh, really?
I do. I think I really like what they've done in Chicago, not only with the Ben Johnson hire, but we know what Ben Johnson likes. He likes his big boys. And they've went out and give credit to Ryan Poole for going out there and getting those guys. So I think the Bears don't finish in last. I'm leaning the Vikings. It could be the Packers, but I know what I get from Jordan Love. I don't know what I'm getting from McCarthy yet.
Right. And I look at, you know, they of course lost Keenan Allen, who has not signed anywhere yet. Kind of still waiting on the proverbial shoe to drop there. But they went and got Olamide Zaccheaus from the Commanders as that sort of wide receiver three to go along with DJ Moore and Rome Odunze. I like that move from them. They went and got Drew Dolman to shore up the center position. I mentioned the trade for Tooney as well as Jonah Jackson. So the interior of that offensive line looks markedly different. They have made some moves along their defensive line. They signed Adeyingbo from, I believe I can't remember where he was prior to coming to Chicago, but he's done some decent things. They're going to pair him alongside Montez Sweat. You picked up Grady Jarrett after he was let go by Atlanta. I think they've done some good things. I still think they need a running back probably, and it wouldn't hurt for them to try to make something happen at the tackle position. And, of course, continue to try to find pieces along that defense, to be sure. But I don't disagree with you. I'm also not the biggest fan of J.J. McCarthy. He didn't impress me during his time at Michigan. He benefited from an elite defense and a running game that carried the bulk of that offense. J.J. McCarthy's got to prove it to me as an NFL quarterback. And until he does so, I'm not going to have a ton of faith in his capabilities as a starter in the league. 913-586-7965 is our number. Final hour of After Hours coming up next, right here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside JT Noah. Folks, this is your home for Kansas City sports.